So I've got a couple of friends who are about to tie the knot this summer. My advice for them, because I have been married 20 years, go to Stamps.com. Hit up Stamps.com right before you drop 200 invites in the mail. It's going to save you a lot of time and money, and it's going to be so convenient. This is why I love Stamps.com. It never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. You can print postage for any mail class right now from your very own computer. Here's what I like best about Stamps.com and why I'm kicking myself for not using it sooner. It saves me so much time and so much money, and then I can use that extra time and focus on my show. I use Stamps.com because it saves me crazy time and crazy money. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in jungle. To take advantage of this great, great service and get this great offer, go to Stamps.com, enter jungle, Stamps.com, enter jungle.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Andy Reid is my guest. Andy, good morning. It is great to have you back in the jungle. How are you?
Hey, it's great to be back, Jim. I'm doing great. Thank you.
My man, great to have you back. All right, so Andy, we're 24 hours away from the draft. So at that moment, as I mentioned, you don't have a first pick in the first round. But with the moves you've already made this offseason, how do you approach the draft? Specifically, the age-old question, are you going to address need or are you going to focus on best available?
You know what, Jim? Brett Veach, our new general manager, has done a great job of setting this offseason up where with the acquisitions that he's brought in, to where we really can go in and say, listen, we're going to take the best player. You know, people say that you're going to do that, but you end up kind of blending it and working through it and coming up with somebody that kind of fits a need but also works in to being the best guy on the board. This here in the second round, picking as late as we are, then it truly does come down to the best player. But like I said, Brett's done a great job of setting this thing up where we can do that.
That voice belongs to Andy Reid. He's the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy, I had Patrick Mahomes on the show before the Super Bowl. I got to tell you, it's almost impossible not to be impressed, even just speaking with him. What did you see from him in Week 17 that made you feel like he was ready to be a full-time starter?
I tell you, that was a pretty neat experience. So, Alex Smith, first of all, is all class and tremendous. We loved him here, and the things that he did building the foundation for this organization will not go unnoticed. And then the opportunity that Patrick had to work with him is priceless. So, but Patrick comes in for that game that we have actually an opportunity to see what he can do. And Mike Kafka, who's now his coach, I got to see what he could do. And I actually worked with him as Brad Childress, Matt Nagy, and Alex worked on our playoff opponent and tried to get a jump on that. So I was able firsthand to see how Patrick did. He handled it so well. He wasn't afraid to speak his opinion. And if there was something in the game plan that he was lukewarm on, by the time we got to game time, he said, you know, we stayed away from that. And then if there were things he wanted to add during the week, we allowed him to do that and put his input and personality into this thing a little bit. And he came out against, really, Denver's number ones. They played their guys, and those are some competitive dudes up there, man. They wanted to kind of put a crunch on this kid, knowing that he might be the future. And he came out and did a heck of a job, very very poised, and led us on to victory. Took us through a two-minute drill there, and it was like clockwork. So we were real happy with how he handled things.
Andy Reid joining me right off the very top of the program. So when you look at what you have in Mahomes, and then you've got Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Kareem Hunt, a host of other running backs, Andy, how excited are you about the potential of the offense top to bottom?
Well, they're good, but I told Pepe this at Javier's. I need to get Miguel up here to play a little quarterback for me. I need a backup quarterback, and
incredible.
He does a great job with his dad. But I think we're okay on offense. I think we have an opportunity here to roll. Again, you add Sammy into the mix here, and he's such an explosive player. And we've got Tyreek. I can go right down the list for you. Conley, who really was coming on last year, got hurt. But he's back healthy, and we have Dat Thomas here. You know, the Mamba. He's a good one from Oregon, a local kid there from Los Angeles, and then you had Kelce, and who's one of the best in the business at what he does, and we had the leading rusher coming back with Kareem Hunt. So And Spencer Ware, who had been our leading rusher the year before, he's coming back off injury. So, listen, we have a chance to be okay. We've got a lot of hard work ahead of us to make sure everybody knows what the heck they're doing. But for right now, we've got a pretty good pitcher here to look forward to.
We're talking Chiefs football with Andy Reid. I'm so glad you mentioned Javier. I have to admit something to you, Andy, in full disclosure. When you and I ran into each other recently at Javier's, when you left, I thought it was a great moment. Maybe not for you, but it was a great moment for me. But when you left, my 17-year-old son, Jake, said to me, Andy, quote, "Dad, I don't know if I have ever seen you so happy to see anybody before." And my response to him was, "Son, I'm not sure I ever have been so happy as I am to see anybody as I was Andy Reid at Javier's." Have you been there before, and what do you think of the restaurant?
You know, I have. I've been there a couple times. I love the place. I mean, I love it. And you said it. There, you always see people in there that you don't expect to see. I was as excited to see you as you were me. So, I mean, it's we haven't talked in a long time. And we used to talk all the time, and for no reason other than I moved back to Kansas City here, and it was kind of a new start. But it was great to see you, and your family's phenomenal. I mean, you had a load there now. People don't realize that that was a long table you had. You have a beautiful wife in Janet. Your son, he was beaming, man, 17 years old. It doesn't get any better. Living in California, eating at Javier's, 17-year birthday, and, I mean, come on. How much better does it get?
Preach, Coach. It doesn't get any better. And then I run into you. That was a highlight. That was an amazing night. I really appreciate you saying all those things. You know, before I let you go, I want to ask you about a couple of guys. You mentioned Kelsey. I've got to ask you about your tight ends coach, Tom Melvin. Now, he coached at my alma mater, UC Santa Barbara, and he called it some of the best years of his entire life. Understand, UC Santa Barbara had a club football team. Understand, UC Santa Barbara now has no football team and hasn't had one for a long time. And the fact that this guy worked there and has had the career that he's had is amazing to me. Can you tell me that you hired him based on the stellar work that he did at UC Santa Barbara? And how back do you go? How far back do you go with Tom Melvin?
Let me just tell you something, Jim. There's no prettier campus, and I went to a pretty good one at BYU, but there's no prettier campus in the world than UC Santa Barbara.
Man.
It is number one. I've been to about every camp, major campus in the United States, having recruited all these different places, and it's unbelievable. He met his wife there. Tom played for me at San Francisco State. How about that one? So
right.
We go way back, and that was when I was fresh out of college. I mean, I was just a couple years older than him, and I was coaching him, and then he's been with me. We went together to Northern Arizona. We went together in Philadelphia and then here. And so he's had a great coaching career.
Andy, listen, you have had an amazing coaching tree around the league. The total 7 former assistants who are now head coaches and another Super Bowl winning head coach in Doug Peterson. I know you're not looking to take credit, but how much pride do you take in the fact when you see guys like Doug, John Harbaugh, Ron Rivera, and the list goes on, having the success they're having around the NFL?
Yeah, and how about Brad Childers just getting
that
hired
too
today by the Atlanta team? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. I'm proud as heck of those guys. And you always say it, you know, you surround yourself with smart, good people, and normally good things happen. And these guys worked hard. They deserve the opportunity. I've got a couple more guys on this staff. Eric Bieniemy is going to be another one coming up here and down the road. So, I mean, these are guys that are just they're phenomenal. I mean, they've done a phenomenal job, and I've been very fortunate to be able to work with these guys.
Last thought, I'm glad you brought him up. I was going to ask you about Bieniemy because I loved talking to him when he was a player. Man, he had this fire, he had this edge, he had this grit. What are you expecting to see from him as your offensive coordinator?
Well, you said it. I mean, he brings it every day. And he's very, very intelligent. And yet he brings a little bit of that L.A. city with him, and I like that. He's another city kid, so I love that he brings that with him. It took him 5 downs to beat us when I was coaching at Missouri, but other than that, I don't hold anything against him. He's done a phenomenal job for me as a running back coach, and I felt so comfortable just moving him right in as a coordinator. And just with his knowledge of the pass game, all the protections, the run game. He's got the whole package, and he's a great leader. And so what do those great leaders do? They make everybody around him a little bit better, and he has that ability.
Well, you're an L.A. City kid who's done pretty well yourself. Chiefs open up against the Chargers September 9th on CBS. Andy Reid coming home. Andy, I can't tell you how happy I am to get caught up with you, to see you at Javier's, but to spend time with you on the show once again. It is just awesome to have you back. Thanks for making time, especially right before the draft, and so good to get caught up with you.
All right, Jim, man, you're the best. Appreciate you.
Let me give you a quick example of how awesome Fan Exchange is. If you think an event is sold out, Fan Exchange probably has tickets, such as Radiohead's North American Tour. You think those tickets are sold out in 2 seconds, right? But I check Fan Exchange, and they've got a grip of Radiohead ducats for every city they're hitting. That's where FanExchange.com comes in. Head on over there for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. There's no getting to the gate and worrying about whether or not you're going to get in. So whether it's NBA, MLB, wrestling, a Broadway musical, Fan Exchange is the way to get closer to the action, and you can find the best seats at the best prices at FanExchange.com. Here's what you need to do. Use the promo code Rome. Promo code Rome and get 50% off service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. Promo code Rome, get 50% off the service fee. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. I love these guys. Check them out today. Dell Demps is my guest. Dell, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Good to be back. I'm a clone at heart, so I'm glad to be back here. Thanks for having me.
My man, Dell, it is so good to hear your voice. Look at you and look at your team. Now, you know you're going to face Golden State in the first round, but take me back to the first, or in the second round, take me back to the first round against Portland. You had a really good Blazers team to match up with, a couple of stars in Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and yet you dominate that series. What did you make of the plan that Alvin Gentry and his staff drew up and the way you guys went out there and then executed it?
Yeah, you know, even though we won four games, those first two games could have went either way. And our staff did a good job with the game plan and our players executing it. And, you know, it was a make or miss league. You know, we made some shots, but, you know, the Blazers, I mean, those first two games were tough, especially playing in Portland in that environment. But I was happy our guys were able to pull it out. And, you know, now we're looking forward to playing against the Warriors. Like, you know, they're defending champs. So, our hands are going to be full. But we're looking forward to the challenge.
It's a great opportunity. Dell Demps joining us. Anthony Davis has already had an amazing career, but he had talked about how none of this really matters unless he has success in the playoffs. Then he goes out and he averages 33, 12, 3 blocks, and 2 steals per game. How pleased were you for him on a personal level to see him show up and dominate the way he did on that stage?
You know, it was awesome, I got to say, because, you know, watching him come in here as a 19-year-old and watching him just grow right in front of our eyes. I watched every game he's played since he's been in New Orleans, and watching him grow has been the fun part. It's been really fun to watch. And, you know, when he came to the league, you know, he's one of the younger guys, and now he's a veteran guy and he's a leader. And one of the great things about his leadership is, you know, a lot of it is based on, you know, things he says to his teammates, but it's also, you know, he leads by example. And one of the great parts of him is, like, there's times when he has to take over games, and there's times when he sees his teammates have it going. He's okay with that. And that's a great part about his leadership. I mean, you know, Drew had a big game too. And in the locker room after the game, I thought he was more happy for Drew than Drew was happy. You know, he was so excited. And that's just him, because he's a great person, comes from a great family, and he's about winning.
We're talking to Dell Demps, Pelicans GM. I'm glad you mentioned Drew. You know, for those who have not paid attention to your team, it was kind of interesting to see people wake up to Drew Holiday and what a special player he is. You invested heavily in him last summer, and then he comes back, he pays it off, 28.7 assists per game while guarding Dame and CJ. Look, Dell, you're not this kind of guy, but when you see Holiday show up like that, is there any part of you that wants to say, you see, this is what I told you what was going to happen. This is why we invested in this guy.
You know, he comes from a great family, and in the thing that happened to him was, like, you know, he had a leg injury that kept him out of training camp 2 years in a row, and then he had a family issue that kept him out of training camp the third year, and we've always felt like his best basketball was in front of him. We just believe that, you know, watching him, like, a lot of times he was just showing up playing in games. And his preparation, you know, his work ethic before the game is unbelievable. And we're thrilled to be getting the fruits from all this right now. But we saw this in him. And we're excited. He's a great person with a great family, with a great wife. I'm glad she's doing well, and we're excited to see him playing this type of basketball.
We're talking Pelicans basketball. They take on Golden State in the next round. I think, Dale, to truly appreciate this, though, I think you got to go back to January when Boogie Cousins tore his Achilles. The thought outside the locker room at that time was, there goes the season. There's no way these guys go to the playoffs, and the changes may, in fact, take place at the end of the season. What do you remember thinking and feeling when the big man went down?
You know, we were rolling at the time. You know, we were the fourth seed when it happened. We were having a really good season. We had just beat Houston on national TV. And, you know, that was probably our biggest win of the season at that time. And the locker room was just gloom afterward, you know, because everyone knew that, you know, DeMarcus was going to be out. I mean, if you'd have walked in that locker room after that big win and saw, you'd have thought we lost by 20. And, you know, I got to give our coaching staff a lot of credit. You know, we lost 5 or 6 right after the injury. We sat down as a group and we basically decided we have to, you know, plays that we ran when DeMarcus was here just weren't working when he wasn't on the floor, because he was such a big part of what we were doing. So we changed, and that's hard to do during the season. And we changed, and you got to give the coaching staff credit for doing it. Alvin and his group did a phenomenal job. And then the players have to execute it, and we had to do it on the fly. And then I think we won 10 in a row after that. And so, you know, I give those guys a lot of credit for, you know, recognizing it, willing it to come with change, which is difficult to do during the middle of the season, and then executing it was a big part for our season.
You know, it seems to me also that not only do you have to do it on the fly, but you've got to do it in an absolutely brutal Western Conference playoff race, and you were able to do that. Also, you acquire Nikola Mirotić from the Bulls, who is an absolute nightmare, Dale, for the Blazers. What has he meant to the team on both ends of the floor?
You know, Nico, he's been phenomenal for us. And, you know, some people think of him as just a shooter. We think of him as a good basketball player. You know, he can make shots, and that's what you see on the highlights. But his defense, his rebounding, his competitive spirit, and then he walks in every day with his huge smile on his face. But the guy competes, and that's the thing that we like about him, is that he's a team guy that competes. And the players, you know, it's hard to come in mid-season and have the acceptance from your teammates, but he's earned that. And they see it because he goes out and competes, and he plays hard, and he'll get on the ground, he'll get the tough rebounds, and you know, like I said, he's been really good for our group.
Hey, listen, Dale, you're not going to make it about you. I know you well enough to know that, but I'll make it about you for 1 minute. You've been with this team through some really challenging times. The work is not done yet this year. I understand that, but what's it mean to you personally to be in the spot where you are right now and to see all that hard work pay off?
You know, I think it starts with our ownership group. And, you know, obviously Mr. B just passed away, and, you know, we're really sad. Mrs. B has taken over, and she's been phenomenal. And, you know, we have, you know, with Mickey Loomis and Dennis Lausch as our team president and executive president, they've been great. They've been patient. They've understand what we've gone through. And you don't see that in professional sports all the time. And I've been fortunate. I've been lucky. They gave us an opportunity, and you know, to be where we are right now. We're happy, but yet we know we still have work to do.
Huge challenge and a huge opportunity in going up against Golden State. As you look at the next round, what kind of thoughts do you have going into the series?
Well, they're defending champs, and you know, we know playing in their building is going to be tough. And you know, the thing I'll say is that, you know, we'll be prepared. We're going to get ready for them, but like I said, they're defending champs, and we're going to go in there, and you know, we have a confident group. You know, we're not overconfident. I think we have the right amount of fear, but at the same time, we have the confidence as well.
Listen, they might be without Steph Curry for some time, and while I know that you would never say they're vulnerable, is there any part of you that looks at the way your team played in the first round and thinks, hey, if we play like that, we can beat anybody in this league?
You know, We feel that way, we do. But we also understand that, you know, this is a big mountain that we're about to climb. But we're embracing that challenge as a group. That's what we're doing. We're embracing it. You know, sometimes, you know, you're happy to be here. I think we're happy for the challenge. And we're happy to see where we stand. And, you know, we know that we're not a finished product, and we're going to continue to grow. But we're just looking forward to this opportunity because we see it as an opportunity.
Get a few days to get ready for it, too. Game one is Saturday night, New Orleans at Golden State. He has spent 5 seasons with San Antonio, named GM in New Orleans back in July of 2010, and a living Big West Conference legend. Dale, it's so good to have you back. Thank you very much. Great talking to you, and good luck.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim. Continue the great work, man. Sustain success. That's what I'm. One day when I grow up, I want to be like you. Just be around forever, man.
You can stop that whenever you want. Thanks, Dale. Clones, it's midweek. I don't know about you, but I'm already looking ahead to the weekend. Not in the sense that I live weekend to weekend, but for the weekend, I want to make sure that when I get my car out, it's looking fresh. You know we have to keep that whip looking fresh. Like sports, car care is a game of numbers, and the best number for your car is 303 Automotive Premium Protectants and Cleaners, designed to clean, shine, and protect. 303 products undergo rigorous testing to ensure superior performance and outstanding protection and to bring out that show car finish. From your dashboard to your tires, 303 keeps your car looking new, longer. 303. We've got your number. For more information, visit my pals at 303radio.com. That's 303radio.com. Derek Jeter. According to the Miami Herald, the team is about to be sued by a former employee for not paying overtime in accordance with state and federal laws. Oh, and back with the Yankees. On pace guy would love to tell you Didi Gregorius is on pace for nearly 60 home runs and 200 RBI. And the New York papers are already saying Derek who? But honestly, all of that, all the losing, the lawsuit, having Didi blow right by him, none of that is surprising. What is surprising is how badly Derek Jeter handled that sit-down with Real Sports and that interview with Brian Gumbel. So the two of them sit down, and they're talking about the fact that Jeter has gutted the team. Gumbel raises the very obvious and fair topic of tanking. Jeets, though? Nah, Jeets. Jeets was not having any of that.
Tanking is not trying your hardest to win ball games every day.
We're trying to win ball games every day.
If you trade your best players in exchange for prospects, it's unlikely you're going to win more games in the immediate future.
When you take the field, you have an opportunity to win each and every day. Each and every day. You never tell your team that they're expected to lose. Never.
Not
now,
so
you can think. Now, I can't tell you how you think. Like, I see your mind. I see. That's how you think. I don't think like that. That's your mind working like that.
No, I get that, but I guess not in so many ways.
But you don't get it.
I do.
You don't. We have two different minds. I can't wait to get you on the golf course, man. I can't wait for this one.
No, I mean.
You're mentally weak.
This guy. You know why he was so smooth? Because he never said anything in 20 years. And then when he started bumping his gums, look what comes out. I mean, did he really just go with a mentally weak blast?
Mentally weak.
I mean, holy crap. That literally could not have gone any worse for Jeter than it did. I have not seen a worse moment for Jeter in front of a camera since he and A-Rod sat down with that guy who couldn't tell which guy was which. How does an interview like this with Gumbel happen? How is a guy who is that polished and that smooth over the course of his entire major league career, and doing it in New York, no less, get turned inside out like that? The guy literally didn't say or do anything wrong for like the 20 years he was in a town where the media and others are watching your every move, waiting for you to misstep. And he literally never did. I mean, not even once. And now this guy, today, now he can't roll out of the rack without stepping in something pretty much every single day. But this is bad, even for Jeter 2.0. Really bad. And don't get me wrong. Gumbel was not lobbing him softballs by any stretch. Gumbel was bringing the heat inside and in on the hands. But Jeter was not handling it well at all. And going with a, quote, mentally weak line on the interviewer when he's asking you fair questions about tanking is pretty much the definition of not handling it well at all. He's calling Gumbel mentally weak.
Mentally weak.
That's rich. I mean, who's the guy who comes off mentally weak in this exchange? The guy who snaps on the one question that he should have known was coming. Then again, I will say, it's like I've always said, there's no greater demonstration of mental strength than calling an interviewer mentally weak. After all, mentally strong people always go to personal attacks during interviews, especially when they're hit with obvious and fair questions. Look at this guy. I mean, look at him. It looks like he's digging in against Mariano Rivera and that cutter for the very first time, and he's got no idea what to do. So he tries to sell you that he's trying to win. And if you say he's not, then you're mentally weak. I mean, that's dumb. Just because you were an awesome competitor as a player does not mean that everything you do as an executive is awesome. For reference, please consult Jordan, Mike. I mean, how does this guy not have a better answer ready than when you take the field, you have an opportunity to win each and every day, each and every day. You never tell your team that you're expected to lose. Never. How does he not have some pat line where he talks about the big picture and he focuses on building a winner? You know, turn on that Jeter charm, sell the long-term success, vision over visibility, you know, all that other crap. Instead, he gets defensive and he tries to shovel some garbage about how this team really is trying to win. And that if Gumbel can't see that, it's because he's mentally weak. Yet we get it, Derek. We get it, Derek. You're not telling your team to lose. Nobody said you were actually walking down into the clubhouse and saying to everybody, hey, I need your attention. Guys, go out there and play your worst today. I want you to go out there and make sure that you lose one for the Jeter. Ready? 1, 2, 3, Cancun. When you trade away pretty much every good player you have on your team, you don't have to say, go out there and intentionally lose. You can tell a bunch of bad players to try their hardest, and no matter how hard they try, they're not going to win. That's tanking. Tanking is not telling players to intentionally lose. Tanking is creating a roster where it's nearly impossible to win. Tanking is intentionally creating a roster that is overmatched. You know, kind of like you were overmatched when you sat down with Brian Gumbel. And you felt so defensive, you had nothing to fall back on, so you had to laugh and try to make jokes about Gumbel and his golf game. But I will tell you this, calling this guy mentally weak is pretty absurd. Next, Jeter will be saying that he actually expects to contend with this roster.
You really expect this team?
I expect
as
this team to compete.
To compete. Compete is one
every
thing. Watch my lips.
I see your lips. I've been seeing them this whole interview. I see your lips moving constantly. You never tell your players that you are expected to lose. You don't do that. You should take that as a slap in the face. As a player, you should take that as a slap in the face.
Do you expect them to contend?
I do. If I don't believe in the players that we have on the field, who's going to believe in them?
But as an executive, it looks like you're delusional if you believe otherwise.
Well, call me delusional.
Well, in that case, you are delusional. If you expect that team, the way you gutted that team to contend, you are delusional. Or if you're not, you're a terrible head of baseball operations. Because if you thought that this roster could actually contend in the NL East, which is not exactly the NL West when it comes to elite teams, then the first month of the season must be really shocking because you're 11 games under 500 and it's not even the end of April. So the only thing worse than tanking and being 6-17 is not tanking and being 6-17. If you weren't tanking before, I would suggest claiming that you're tanking right now. Going 6-17 and tanking implies you have a plan. But going 6-17 and not tanking implies you are terrible at your job. Going 6-17 and not tanking and calling critics mentally weak pretty much confirms that you are terrible at your job.
Mentally weak?
It's not going well, Jeets. It's not going well at all. Not going well at all.
Call me delusional.
You're delusional. Let me take a moment and talk to you about your car or boat or lawnmower or RV or all of the above. Stabil products keep them all running smoothly year after year, providing protection for every engine you own. Every Stabil product is specially formulated to treat each of your vehicles or equipment differently, whether they're on the road, in the water, or in your backyard tool shed. Stabil products have been recommended by over 100 original equipment manufacturers and have been used and trusted by consumers for 60 years. Whether for day-to-day use or during long periods of storage, you can rely on Stabil's powerful fuel additives to protect your vehicle or equipment from today's fuels. You want to visit StabilRadio.com for more information. Once again, StabilRadio.com to get all the information you need. Yogi Roth is my man. He is here in studio. Yogi, it is so good to see you. What's going on? How is life? And first and foremost, I have to ask, how great is ball?
It's perfect this week. I mean, it doesn't get any better, right? You got the images of the players that are going to get drafted early on. What order? Who knows? But life is good, man. I love coming in here. Look at what you guys have created. I mean, clearly you're already massive, but to do it like this, I love it. I hear from so many people every time I come on. So thanks for bringing
it. I do too. I hear from everybody when you come on. I appreciate you making time. It's great to see you here. We're talking quarterbacks, and this is exactly where you live. This is your wheelhouse. You know Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen as well as any analyst out there. I would never ask you to pick one guy over the other guy, but can you break it down? What are their similarities, and what are the differences between the two of them?
Well, they are competitors. I mean, obviously, I think to get in the game at that position, you got to do that. You have to be able to complete the ball. Like, there's some things that just be in the conversation of being up on that board or being a top draft pick. What I love them both about the most is probably they're both seekers. You know, they really are seeking answers to the test. They're seeking to add tools to their toolbox. You know, you heard it with Sam and I this season. We did a podcast together, and the podcast was a masterclass where Sam and I would interview people that are best in class, people like Will Ferrell, right? Then we would talk to Justin Turner of the Dodgers. Then we would talk to Mike Gervais, a psychologist. Then we talked to Pete Carroll and Trent Dilfer and Colin Cowherd, a bunch of different people, so he could add tools to his toolbox. And you saw him easily apply those, I thought, as the season went on, when turnovers were big and everybody was, you know, talking smack on him, to then as he finished the entire season and then obviously declared for the draft. And then for Josh, I loved what he did even yesterday, just going on
TV. So great. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a competitive side.
For those who missed it, what are you talking about and what did you like about it?
Yeah, great call. Josh is getting interviewed, I believe, on the NFL Network, and he basically just seems like fed up to me, I think, and I would be as well, of comping yourself to everybody. And he says, look, I've been number two my whole career. You know, back when he was a sophomore in high school, top two quarterbacks in the country were number one, Ricky Town, who has since transferred a couple times, SC, Arkansas, Ventura Community College. Now he's at Pitt, so we hope he finishes strong at my alma mater.
Right.
Josh was number two. You look at the Elite 11, Blake Barnett, who's now at Arizona State, formerly Alabama, was the MVP that year. Josh wasn't. And then you look at him now, and it's everybody and then Josh. And he kind of just was a truth teller, to be quite honest with you. Now, I don't think you should be comping yourself to other players. That's another discussion, I think. But overall, you saw the competitive side that never gets talked about. It's his brain. Is he too smart for his own? All this BS, in my opinion, about Josh Rosen.
I mean, what do you make of that BS? I mean, this guy, he's got this edge. He's got this intellect. But, I mean, you're around elite quarterbacks all the time. When you look at somebody like Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, they want to know everything about what's happening in the offense and why certain plays are called in certain situations. Why would a coach not want something like that? And isn't that what Rosen is asking?
Yeah, to me, it's a really cool story. When I look back, even when my career began, I started working for Steve Sarkisian, who's now with the Falcons. And he was a 31-year-old quarterback coach for the Raiders. And he walked into his first meeting. It was with Rich Gannon. Rich Gannon might have been 38, 40, right, towards the end of his career. But, you know, had come off of a Super Bowl appearance, was a big-time guy.
And Sark, MVP,
right. And Sark was like, I got to come in and prepare so hard for my meetings. So I raise my game so he doesn't laugh me out of the room. This has almost flipped to a degree of Josh saying, I just want to be prepared. What's that? That to me is the ultimate seeker. What is wrong with that? And when you talk to Marcus Tuiasosopo, who coached him as a sophomore, Noel Mazzoni coached him as a true freshman, Jed Fish, who coached him last year, they said you have to be prepared. And why wouldn't you? Because the coaches aren't out there on the field when it's live, specifically in the league when it's twice as fast as it was in college. So I think it's BS. I think it's a narrative that is total, a word I can't say. Probably
bull crap.
Yeah, total bull crap. because I think Josh is a guy that has showcased dedication, clearly has unique arm talent, unique functional football acumen, and I think he's going to thrive where he goes. And if a coach is put off by that, then why are you in the profession, man? Your job is to grow and cultivate that position.
Yeah, but if you're threatened by that, you've got the wrong line of work. Yogi Roth joining me in studio. He's a Pac-12 football analyst. He is also a filmmaker and a New York Times bestselling author. Go back to what you said about Sam Darnold, and we touched on this in the past, but one of the knocks has been the turnovers, ball security, maybe some of his mechanics. How big of a concern is all of that in your mind?
Well, I think if it was picks or if it was completion percentage, it'd be a bit way different type of concern, right? He's not... hasty with the ball in terms of just being careless and just having this confidence, I can make every throw. We've seen that from guys in the past. Saw it at times with Matt Barkley coming out of Southern. Saw it out of high school with him, you know, forcing balls sometimes because you're so confident in your arm you can make throws. Saw it with Christian Hackenberg in terms of accuracy from high school to college to the NFL. I think with Sam, to address mechanically, I think that's a total farce because you look at what we use at the Elite 11, which is called LTA, load to arrival. So when I load that arm, when does it get there? So it's velocity, revolutions of the ball, and also his release. When you time that, it's as quick as anybody in the league, let alone in the draft. So I don't worry about mechanics at all. You look at accuracy, I still believe that he will complete more balls than a lot of quarterbacks would even attempt. You look at some of the throws he's made in his career, and whoa, wow, that jumps out at you. Now, when I look at his interceptions, all but two, he's completed that same ball many times. So you don't want to take the stinger away. Fumbles, clearly an issue. He addressed it as the season went on. But you look at the back half of his year, it wasn't a concern. So I don't see a trade with him of small hands, right? People said that about Jared Goff coming out. Sam doesn't have that. Same size as Josh Rosen. I don't think the fumbles are as big of a deal as people make it out to be. And I honestly compare the draft this year to the Heisman campaign. Heisman campaign, what do? Every July, we say, who's number one? And then we pick them apart. Tell me Andrew Luck wasn't the best player in the country that year. Should have won the Heisman, but he was projected to be that guy, and we picked him apart all season long, which is why in the last 11 years, one player has won the Heisman who was projected to win it, and it was Matt Leinart. To me, we just want to pick these guys apart because we got 4 or 5 months to do it.
We got nothing better to do. And it takes, I mean, we never actually get there. So what are we going to do? We're going to shred guys. Now, Yogi Roth in studio, if you're Cleveland and you know the situation they have both on the field and off the field, the fact that they have not won, you know what kind of town that is? Who would you take with the first pick?
Honestly, I would probably, the way that, if I was the coach, I think it's different than if I'm the front office. I'm the coach. I'm saying we won one game, I think, in the last 2 years, right?
Sure.
I don't know how long I got here. We got to win, and we need to win now. So we got a quarterback.
Or how I'm even still here.
Fair. Yeah. I would take Saquon Barkley, to be quite honest with you, because he's an instant impact player. And I've heard that argument a lot, and I just believe it. I think that in the NFL, all the coordinators I've talked to in the league say the same thing about quarterbacks. For the most part, when they come in, they haven't played the system, which is the NFL, which is anticipatory, reading fronts, coverages, understanding the rotations of defenses, truly being a football nerd. Now, what do they do? In the offseason, when they declare or go to the NFL, they spend 2 months training with a quarterback builder, Jordan Palmer, George Whitfield, variety of talented people around the country that do that. And they're awesome on the board. But they haven't had the reps on the field in games, so they're going to be a hair late. So I wouldn't take a guy and expect him to play right now if it was me in that type of situation. Front office, I'd take Sam Darnold. I think his ceiling's the highest among all the quarterbacks there. But I do see a couple franchise guys, specifically Josh Rosen and Sam in this draft.
Yogi, what about Barkley? I mean, is he the best pure football player coming out right now, or is he more than that? Are we talking about a generational talent?
I think it's a generational talent. I can remember being at the opening. You should come this year. It's awesome. It's at Jerry World in Dallas, and it's the top 166 high school players in the country, seniors to be. And we bring in the best position player in college to be a counselor. We brought in Saquon Barkley, and I looked at him, and just like one thigh, and I was like, that's my torso. Like, the dude is physically gifted.
Unbelievable, right?
You talk to him, and he's got a competitive grace to him that you say, that's what a pro sounds like. I think he's a star. He catches the ball to the backfield. He's going to impact the game in a lot of different ways. You look at the Big Ten, and the focus is different than other conferences in terms of it's more run heavy than even given credit for. And I think it's always talked about as being a little bit run heavy. The focus was on him clearly throughout the season. And I think he's big time. I think he's a guy that I don't know if he plays 10 years. I don't know if any running back plays 10 years anymore. But I do think he could be an all pro in his first season.
I mean, physically, you look at this guy and you know he's just an unbelievable specimen. But the intangibles are just off the charts. Yeah. Like an unbelievable guy. I've got to ask you about Baker Mayfield. You and I have talked about him in the past. We talked about him after the semifinal game. A few months on from that, how do you think that his game translates to the NFL?
I think his off-platform game is awesome. I mean, and that's basically
explain second. What you mean by that?
So second, third reaction game. So when it's clean in the pocket, five-step drop, ball out, everybody can do that. When it's dirty and muddied in the pocket, second reaction, third reaction, avoid a D lineman, avoid a linebacker from secondary depth. If you can do those things, you're special. That's where he's elite. Now, what will be interesting about him is that clearly his whole game was not under center when he was in college. Now, I get the NFL is not necessarily everybody in under center, but the timing of under center. You talk to Steve Young about it, and he would always talk about when you take that drop, you train your eyes to understand when the ball goes out. And I truly believe your feet follow your eyes. So if your eyes are looking to the left, like you're driving a car, the car goes that way. Same thing at the quarterback position. You have to understand all those fluid movements. So I think that's an area of his game that we'll probably have to develop. But when I look at this young man competitively, think about what he's done.
Right.
One of the greatest stories in the history of the game.
For sure.
I mean, I'm a former walk-on. I know what it was like to get a scholarship off the charts. If I won the Heisman? I mean, the chip is just insane. Now, where is there an issue? I think the issue is just with what his reality is, which is his behavioral pattern. We've talked about that. I learned the hard way when I remember getting on the table for Johnny Manziel prior to the draft a couple years ago, and I just bailed on the behavioral pattern. Says, no. This is Johnny being a college kid. Well, clearly he would admit now that those traits and those patterns did not help him out when he got to the NFL. You look at Baker, elite competitor, elite quarterback, I think, in the second, third reaction game. But there's been some issues where quarterbacks, the number one thing in the league, I think, is to trust. Are you going to trust him in all situations? Of course, you would hope that you can. But based on what he's done, it gives you pause when you're putting his resume up against Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, and Josh Allen. So I think it's a fair assessment. I don't know him as intimately as the guest you're going to bring on with his coach. I'm sure they're going to love him up, and they should. I think he'll be a talented pro, but I think it's fair to make that comp when you look at the other guys.
See, I was going to ask you about that because he hates that comparison. He's made that really clear. Look, I'm not that guy. Don't compare me to that guy. Do you think it's a fair comparison in terms of behavioral patterns? And if so, how come?
No, I don't think – I wouldn't ever want to compare him to Johnny. I think Johnny, at least what he's even revealed in recent months, it was extreme in terms of his lifestyle choices.
Right.
I don't see that with Baker Mayfield at all. I had a chance to talk to him, interview him at the Heisman. Love the guy, to be quite honest with you. I remember him at Elite 11 when he came out, and you know, we're on his checklist of like people he wants to prove wrong. And I love that about him because he didn't get selected. You know, he was undersized. He couldn't really size up and evaluate his heart, his competitive temperament, how much his teammates love him. So he has some tools that are amazing. To me, the biggest thing with him, like anyone who goes to the league, is who do you surround yourself with? And what's first? Is the main thing, right? It's the cliche. Keep the main thing.
Right.
Right. And I gotta trust that he'll do that because eyes are everywhere around him, but you do have to ask the question of, are you constantly comping yourself to that list all the time? Are you constantly trying to prove people wrong all the time? Not saying that isn't a good thing, but I don't think it's an elite thing. I think the elite competitors I've been around, they don't even worry about everybody else, right? I'm interviewing Elgin Baylor tonight, one of the greats of all time. That's how he was. Right? That's how Larry Fitzgerald is. That's how, to me, the elites are like, you need to worry about me. I ain't worrying about you. And I'd be curious what his makeup is rookie year, third year, fifth year, because I bet that's where some growth will happen.
It's so interesting. A guy once told me that, too, that's got to be your mindset, that not that we have to deal with them, they have to deal with us. But then when I look at the fire, man, the fuel that this guy gets out of it, I understand that you don't want to go too far, but isn't that what makes this guy or guys like that? Man, it's the fuel, that high premium, highly unleaded rocket fuel that they're running on.
Totally agree. But I do think this, the psychology would say that can elicit inconsistent performance. Right? When you come in, and if I was going to do my show every day and base it off the ratings that Jim Rome got or what he said this morning on his show, I'm not going to be at my purest. I'm going to be driven. You better believe it. I'm going to wake up even earlier. You better believe it. I'm going to research even harder. You better believe it. But I will not be in my flow state or my maximum elite potential every time I'm out.
Because you're focused on me and not your process.
Even
I'm
if
in your head.
It's just an element of it, right? I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I was motivated by getting turned down for Ronnie Rodimer. Nobody remembers that name.
Sure.
He was the top receiver in the country in 1999, and Notre Dame and Bob Davie and Urban Meyer took him over me. He drove me my entire career as a player. I look back on it, probably not very healthy because I was obsessive in everything that I did.
Huh.
I think now when you look at the tools available to quarterbacks, specifically guys that get to the league, psychology, all the things that are there.
And what happened to that guy?
He ended up transferring from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never played, right? So I think that it's beautiful to be motivated, of course. His drive, I'd say, is as high as anybody's we've been around. But I think that it's a fair question when you look at somebody like that. Now, I think that he'll thrive. Do I think he's the number one pick? No, I would take either Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen over him. But I am excited to see him because I think the days of having to be 6'4 in the NFL are gone. I think the game's changing and the NFL is catching up. And Andy Reid, he told to a guy on our staff, Elite 11, a couple years ago, he said college and high school are 5 years ahead of the NFL. And I think the NFL is catching up to the draft of Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston and that style of play.
Yogi Roth joins me in studio for a few more moments. Before I let you go, you were at the UCLA spring game. What do you think of what you saw from the Chip Kelly UCLA Bruins?
I'm pumped for it, to be honest. You know, I think personnel-wise, a lot of times in the spring, I'll say, okay, who's an NFL player? You know, I don't think personnel-wise they right now have guys that are first-round draft picks next year in the draft. But I think you look at the way they recruited, the way they're recruiting, how long they're getting, and then you add in, number one, the tempo of offense. It's not that everybody's running with the same stuff. I think that is an argument that's super average and not enough homework's done when it's like, well, everybody's caught up to that. Everybody's doing that. The style in which they're operating their tempo at, all the intricacies of that, that to me is unique. The way that he's training it across the entire facility, from how they go to class and how they train and how they meet, it's really fun to watch this team. I went once a week for 6 weeks to their spring practices up to the spring game last weekend, and their tempo is going to keep them in games. Their defense is good enough to win them games. So I don't think this is a team that wins the South this year, but I think in 3 years, when they have Dorian Thompson-Robinson, a huge quarterback recruit who came out of Bishop Gorman High School this year, when he's entrenched as a starter, and the big 6'3", 6'4", wide receivers they have, and the elite speed running backs they have, and they just get faster and longer, this will definitely be a team competing for Pac-12 championships.
But the really important stuff right now, you're always looking to challenge yourself, to grow, to take on new experiences. You're all about life without limits. The podcast indicates as much. To that point, you recently dabbled in sweet potato tater tots. How did that go for you?
It was phenomenal.
Is that superfood or what?
It was superfood, man. I was in Utah, Salt Lake, and the University of Utah has basically like their ESPY Awards, so I got to host it this year.
How'd that go?
It was hilarious. We had a dance-off. It was great. I mean, you know, being around, you know, 300-400 student-athletes, it reminds you that people like Baker, Josh, Sam, right, Saquon, the people that we're picking apart, they're still human beings, and sure, it's so fun to learn their stories. So I had to finish it off that night. You know, instead of finishing it off with like a cold beer, I finished it off with about, you know, 2 dozen tater tots.
How were they? They were great, right?
Killed it. Sweet potato, yeah, too,
amazing.
Man.
Yeah, they look amazing.
Yeah, it will change your life. Yeah, with a little mustard. Come on,
what
now.
You, for mustard? Okay, I wouldn't have gone there. Yeah. How about the mustard?
It was on the
hot
plate.
Hot mustard? Sweet mustard? What?
Yeah, it was a little sweet and spicy. So by the end of the plate, I ended up combining the mustard and ketchup just to kind of have some fun on my own there.
All right, so aside from that, where are you with nutrition? You look great right now. Are you going paleo? What are you doing for nutrition?
No, so I grew up a vegetarian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And my bad, that's right.
Yeah, so I eat fish every once in a while. Yeah, I know, I'm conscious, I think. I'm probably a boring eater, but I'm heading, my summer, I'm going to go to San Sebastian, Spain, which is like the food capital of the planet.
Dude, really? Tell me about that, because we're looking for a trip, and we've talked about that, but have never been there.
Oh, you should come. I'm leaving next Friday.
Have you been?
Yeah, I went last summer, surfed for like 4 days between Biarritz and San Sebastian. I'm heading on Friday of next week.
How were the waves last summer there?
World class. Like for me, like it's just longboard heaven. So I'll just go out and cruise. Sun goes down at 10 o'clock at night. Have a couple cold drinks late at night sitting on the beach. To me, it's absolutely perfect. So I'm going to go spend a month there.
A month, dude?
Yeah, hang out.
So you can do the podcast from there?
I'm going to do the podcast. I'm going to write. I'm working on a new book right now. So
what's
I'm going to dive into that. It's going to be called Seek.
Mike Bouchard tweets, Jim, I am going to Javier's Crystal Cove soon. What is the appropriate dress code? I've never been there, but I can't wait. Essentially, whatever you want, but don't be a slob. I mean, no shirts, no shirt, no shoes, no service. You know, show up a certain way. I don't know, dress like you might run into Andy Reid, because you might.
All right, Jim, man, you're the best. Appreciate you.
Dress like you might run into Kobe Bryant, because you might. I've seen both those guys there. Dress like you might run into the cat, Tiger Woods. You might. I've seen him there. Dress like you might run into John Lackey, who I saw there once.
Hey, John.
Dress like you might run into some of those losers from the Orange County Housewives, because they show up. Just dress responsibly, respectfully, appropriately. Dress like you might run into
George
some
Clooney.
Cougs. Not George Clooney. I've never seen him there.
Sean Dunstan.
Sean Dunstan? Yeah, I haven't seen him there.
Kerry Collins?
I have not seen Kerry Collins there.
Charles Oakley.
Oh, man, I wish I'd see Oak there. Oak's a foodie. Oak
John
is a foodie.
Elway.
Oak would appreciate it. John Elway.
John Elway.
Have not seen John Elway there. I've seen all these people in public and out and about, either at games or parties, but I've never seen most of these guys there. But that's not to say they won't be there. I have never seen Hope Solo. I would give anything to see Hope Solo there. That would be on par with Andy Reid.
Jeff Hostetler.
Have not seen Jeff Hostetler there. Let me
Dan
think.
Marino.
No. Have not seen Dan Marino there. Listen.
Jeff Gordon!
Would love to see Jeff Gordon there. Alvin, give me a minute. Who you see there? You see Orange County's finest. You see Orange County's cougarist. You see people with extremely bright chiclets. You see people who have faces that are all jacked up from all the Botox. I mean, it's unbelievable. The food is great. The real estate is great. The people watching is amazing. You see visiting teams, visiting MLB teams hang out. The Yankees like to go around there. So dress appropriately. You never know who you might see. We'll not see her, I don't think. You could see me and my family because we hang out there quite a bit.
Tom Pagnozzi.
Tom Pagnozzi would be an amazing sighting. Have not seen him there.
Deion Branch.
Have not seen Deion Branch.
Pedro Guerrero.
Definitely have not seen him there. Not Pedro. Or Oj.
Steph Curry of the Golden State Warriors.
Man, that'd be so great. Haven't seen Steph.
Roger Clemens!
Haven't seen Roger Clemens there.
Tommy Smothers.
Definitely not Smothers. Kurt Orban. Oh, dude. Orban would be amazing. Alvin, work with me. You're making it sound like the stars don't go to Javier's when they do. You know who you want to see most of all? The only bigger star than Kobe and Andy Reid, and I think even both these guys would cop to it. As an example, if I were to say to Kobe Bryant, who would you want to see at Javier's? I bet he would say this. If I were to say to Andy Reid, if you could see one guy at Javier's, who would you want to see? If you were to ask me, other than those two, who would I want to see? All three of us would say the same thing. Freaking Javier. You go to Javier's, you want to see Javier. Seeing Javier is like seeing Robert De Niro in his prime, or Al Pacino, or De Niro and Pacino rolled into one. So we'll see. To answer your question, Mike, man, just dress like you're going to run into one of these people because you probably will. Dress like you're about to have the best Mexican food in your life because you probably will. Dress like you're going to go to one of the coolest spots ever because you probably will.
Wes Weckler.
Wes Weckler. I could see Weckler going there. That is Weckler's kind of place. If Weckler is in the 949 or Weckler is in the 702 or Weckler is in whatever the area code is for San Jose, Mexico, I could see Weckler going. Weckler likes to have a good time. He would go.
Tom Jackson.
Don't know about TJ. Not sure. My man Bart Scott. He'd get after it. Bart Scott would love Javier's.
No.
Maybe. Was on airplane with him from New York to L.A. not long ago. He might find his way to it.
Glenn Rice.
Glenn Rice, for sure. All right, Alvin. Is there anybody that we left out?
Jim Rome,
for sure. For sure.
Louis Slungpugh.
Slungpugh will not be there. Javier takes care of everybody except for Slungpugh.
Don Cornelius from Soul Train.
My man. It's a good dude. That was a good dude. Anyway, to tell you all you need to know about the restaurant, my 17-year-old son, I mean, we have kind of an understanding. Wherever you want to go for your birthday, I will take you. You want to go to L.A., we'll go to L.A. You want to go to San Diego, we'll go to San Diego. He's like, nope, just go to Javier's. Let's go to Javier's, Crystal Cove. Rome, are there any famous rappers who go to Javier's, and would they hit on your wife? If so, which ones? Tony Albuquerque, nice try. That happened at Mr. Chow's, and I'm not giving up who it was. I was not there that night.
Good night,